Wondery Plus subscribers can listen to the Al Franken podcast ad-free right now. Join Wondery Plus in the Wondery app.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hello, welcome to the Franken podcast. Heidi Heitkamp of North Dakota is my guest today, former senator now, like me. She is from North Dakota, and I'm next door in Minnesota, both states with sizable rural populations. Heidi has started an organization, One Country, which is all about helping Democrats in general, Democratic politicians specifically, I guess, get to understand rural America. And it's not that hard, really. Just go there and talk to rural folks. A couple of weeks ago, I think as the beginning of the Moniz show, so you can go back and listen to this. Something I'm really happy with. I told a story about Willmar, Minnesota, which is a rural city. It's about 20,000 people. It's the county seat of Canda-Yohai County, which is the largest turkey-producing county in Minnesota. And Minnesota is the largest turkey-producing state in the country. There's a lot of turkeys. And Willmar has a huge Jennie-O turkey processing plant. And because of that, there are a lot of Hispanic Americans working there and now Somali Americans. And you remember, I brought this up because Trump had done the thing with Ilhan Omar, who's my congresswoman, saying, you know, basically go back where you're from, go home. And her home is Minneapolis. That's my home. She's my congresswoman. And that's America. We're all immigrants except for American Indians. So that's what America is. I don't think Trump understands that. So I tell a story about the reason I talk about Willmar is that there is now a sizable Somali population. There is has been a sizable Hispanic population. And as it so happens, one of my pages in the U.S. Senate from Minnesota was Muna Abdullahi, who's from Willmar. And a couple years after she was in the Senate, she was chosen as the class speaker for the commencement at Willmar. And I, of course, injected myself into the commencement to introduce her. And I describe these kids in this community. And it's one of the greatest things I've ever seen in my life. Muna was the speaker, the valedictorian, was born in Ecuador. And these kids love each other. So go to the Moniz one, the podcast, And listen to that if you like. Okay, so we're going to go to Heidi now. Heidi Heitkamp and her organization, One Country. Enjoy, won't you? I'm here with Heidi Heitkamp, and as you can tell, we're friends. And we're both now former senators from contiguous states. Heidi is a North Dakotan,
yep,
and Minnesotan. So we're going to be talking about rural America, mm-hmm, and we're going to be talking about how Democrats don't connect to folks in rural America.
Mm-hmm.
And Heidi, you have an organization called One Country that you formed.
Mm-hmm.
That's the whole purpose of it is to, well, why don't you?
Well, I think the whole purpose is to, number one, let everybody know, because you hear it and I hear it, anyone who represents any rural parts of the country. They always, if you're in New York or if you're in L.A., what do they want? Who are they? You know, they want to know who rural people are. And I just always remind them that they're no different than the people who live next door to you. You know, I always say what a cab driver in New York wants is really pretty similar to what a small business owner in a rural town wants. They want good things for their kids. They want good education. They want the country to run right. They want to be protected. They want their kids to be healthy and have access to health care. And mainly they just want to know that their kids are going to grow up in a country that is still thriving and exceptional. And so we named it One Country for that reason. There was a lot of discussion about, well, do you call this thing rural America? And I said, no. I mean, the division has to end at some point, and we have to find commonality. And the one thing that we discovered, and I know, Al, you probably saw it in your work, you know, you could win rural counties when you started out that would be virtually impossible today to win again.
One out of six jobs in Minnesota is tied to agriculture.
Yeah.
Not all rural.
Yeah.
Minnesota
is big ag processors in Minneapolis.
Yes, we got ag processors all over the place, yeah. And Wilmer. And the first thing Democrats have to do to win over votes in rural counties, in rural areas, is go to
show
rural
up.
Areas.
Yeah.
Show up. And if you show up, a couple things happen. You learn stuff.
Yeah.
And also they meet you. So they get to know you. And I think one of your assets, Heidi, is that people like you.
Well, I mean, people know me. I've been around forever in North Dakota. And I think the same thing
you
is
were
true.
You were attorney general.
I was attorney general. I was tax commissioner, which is actually, you know, people like tax commissioners in North Dakota. I served 10 years on the board of directors of something called Dakota Gas. And so I spent a lot of time kind of in the rural areas dealing with rural energy issues. So I think when you look at it, it's like, we don't really like Democrats, but you're okay. But why are you a Democrat? Right. So I think the Democratic brand over years, and you could overcome that too, Al, because you're a big personality.
Well, what I showed was that I learned it.
Right.
I always would start anytime I talked to an ag group, I'd say I grew up in St. Louis Park, which is a suburb of Minneapolis, and I knew nothing about agriculture. If you had asked me when I was 8 years old, where does food come from? What do you think I'd say?
The grocery store.
No, I'd say the farm because I wasn't an idiot.
Okay, so now you feel like you landed the big one, so now I'm forever going to be tainted that way, Al? You set me up. Admit it.
Oh, everybody says, I get the whole crowd says, the grocery store. And I said, no, the farm because I'm not an idiot. We had books in our house. I watched TV. Green Acres was on TV.
Yeah, because that's the reality of life.
Well, yeah, that's what we thought. Yeah. It's a lot of people in rural Minnesota who moved from Fifth Avenue or whatever. But the thing is if you go to rural Minnesota, for example, let's talk about healthcare.
Mm-hmm.
When the Republicans wanted to replace the ACA with what they had proposed, I did a tour of rural hospitals, and people were crying. They went nuts because it was going to slash Medicaid. It was going to end Medicaid expansion. And what had happened in rural Minnesota, and I'm sure in rural North Dakota, is that suddenly there wasn't all of this uncompensated care where emergency rooms have to, you know, you take someone and then
nobody
they
pays
have no,
the bill.
And they don't pay the bill. Now Medicaid would pay the bill. So what did they do? They hired more doctors. They hired more technicians. They hired more nurses. They hired more housekeeping. They made the food better. And they delivered better care. And employed a lot of people.
Mm-hmm.
Very often, as we were talking on the way over here, the biggest employer in the county would be the hospital.
everybody kind of focuses on agriculture, and agriculture is the big enchilada. It's the wealth creator in most rural counties in North Dakota. But if you really look at where does that wealth get spent, and what services do we need to maintain an economy, you need good schools, which means you need good teachers, which are getting harder and harder to recruit into rural areas. You need excellent health care, especially given that rural areas have a higher percentage of elderly. So are you going to leave grandma in a nursing home that's understaffed, that doesn't have quality care, if you live in Fargo? You're not. You're going to move grandma to Fargo so she's closer to you, plus you can judge and monitor the quality of care. If we don't fix these problems of workforce, if we don't fix these problems of growing the rural economy, we won't have a rural economy. What we're going to have is the outback. And the president's policies are disastrous for rural
America. What we're going to have are machines farming.
Yeah, I mean, in part, you already have a high level of automation in agriculture, but it's going to get worse if time goes on and we don't see any correction. Yeah, I mean, I don't know if you saw the story, Al, about the trade assistance. Trade assistance that was, in fact, evaluated from last year. The vast majority, in fact, 80% went to the wealthiest farmers in America. You know, leaving the poor stakeholder farmers.
Now, this is for individual farmers market?
These are the dollars that the president has, some people would say, bribed farmers with in reaction to the trade wars that he started and the loss of markets. So they lose markets. The president says, don't worry about this. If you lose a market, what we'll do is we'll basically subsidize you per bushel of grain or soybeans, which is the highest reimbursement.
We'll make you whole, supposedly. But
well, you can't make people whole.
No. Every farmer pays into an organization that gets markets.
The checkouts, the checkoff programs.
Okay. And how much is that?
Well, it's literally millions of dollars that have been utilized over the last, 30, 40 years to grow markets. And that's how the soybean market got so extensive in China. 90% of all North Dakota soybeans prior to the trade war basically went out the Pacific. And when they went out the Pacific, most of those went to China. And now, that market's gone.
Now, that's the thing. They paid. They did the checkoff. Paid into expanding markets for American soybeans. That market's gone because they aren't now going to South America.
Yeah.
This has killed the price of soybeans. And I don't, most farmers, I'd say in Minnesota, row
crops.
Corn, crops.
Soybeans.
Yeah. And that's if you go by the countryside, you see corn and soybeans.
In North Dakota, the single largest cash crop that basically helps pay the bills for farmers is soybeans. We've lost our soybean market. The president has said, I love you all farmers, so here's a bunch of money that we're just going to divert from other purposes, and we're going to give to farmers. But now we're discovering that, if you think that's, the guy farming on 1,000 acres is the guy who's making off on that, that's not true. It's always the big guys who always get farm payments. And so now we're in this spot where we're in it for 2 years. And it's not just for farmers. It's not just losing the market. It's the fact that now we have a glut of soybeans. So people planted. He announced this program before people planted. So people planted soybeans thinking, okay, we'll get
so
the subsidy
all this
payment.
Is in storage.
But if you can't sell it, now we have a glut. But my point is, if you look at the policies of Trump and this administration, they're devastating for rural agriculture. They're devastating for rural health care. They aren't particularly good for rural education.
No.
They aren't investing in infrastructure and making sure that the roads get better, the farm-to-market roads get better, or that a rural broadband is there.
Those are all the things you hear about.
Yeah.
Broadband, if they don't have it, if their kid
doesn't have it,
can't get on the internet to study, it's an incredible handicap. And, schools that can assign things where you can go on and research something. Sometimes it's a library that people have to go to. Yeah. Sometimes you have to park in a certain place in a McDonald's.
Yeah, I saw two little kids in rural North Dakota. They were sitting outside the library because the library hadn't opened up, and they were playing games. And I said to him, I leaned down, I said, oh, are you guys just waiting for the library to open? They kind of look at me like, we don't care if the library opens or not. We're just down here taking Wi-Fi from the library. They like, we're playing games. What lady? What? I mean, we're going to go in there and read a book? No. Yeah. I mean, but it's a reminder. North Dakota actually has pretty good connectivity. The real thing that you need to do is you need
come
to look
to
at
North Dakota.
Yeah.
Connectivity.
Connectivity.
It's not a problem.
And unlike any other rural state in America, North Dakota's made the investments necessary to survive in rural America.
That's a great 30 seconds spot.
And then you show someone different to read it.
Yeah, then you show beautiful locations.
And I've got plenty of those. But my point is, going back to One Country, it's a political organization that hopefully reconnects the Democratic Party to rural America and basically opens up or reintroduces ideas that we may have in the Democratic Party that rural America can see as viable and legitimate to their future. But we have to get beyond the instant reaction that you see so often in rural America, which is, I don't trust Democrats. I don't trust Democrats to do the right thing.
And
I don't,
that's because
they don't know them.
They don't know Democrats. And one thing that Howard Dean did as chairman of the DNC was saying we're a 50-state strategy, and that's a while ago now. We need to do that. The best way to learn a language? Immersion. Living where the language is spoken and using it every day. But if that's not in the cards this year, you can still learn a language the second best way, and that's with Babbel. Babbel's quick 10-minute lessons are handcrafted by over 200 language experts to help you start speaking a new language in as little as 3 weeks. Babbel's convenient courses have helped me learn real-life conversation in German. For example, let's say you wanted to order soup with your dinner. Die Suppe würde mir auch gefallen. That means the soup. that means I would also like the soup. And that way, I get soup with dinner. Here's a special limited-time deal for our listeners. Right now, get up to 60% off your Babbel subscription, but only for our listeners at babbel.com/franken. Get up to 60% off at babbel.com/franken, spelled babbel.com/franken. Rules and restrictions may apply. On the way here from the airport, we were talking about, you know, rural America isn't all ag.
No.
And you say that they want their kids to stay here, to stay home. Of course you do. And of course you want to see your grandchildren. And of course you want to, that's a big part of life. And there is manufacturing in rural America. And sometimes there is a community and technical college that needs some help to train people for that manufacturing.
Yeah. Well, one of the things I always get my back up a little bit when we talk about growing out opportunities for coding or, you know, the kinds of things that you can actually do in rural America where you don't have to sit in a cubicle in San Francisco. And I said, our biggest problem is not having the talent.
And getting like a really nice apartment in North Dakota is a lot cheaper.
I mean, my daughter lives in San Francisco. I can tell you that where she lives would cost maybe $150 a month in Fargo, and she didn't pay that in the Mission District in San Francisco. But so my point would be, guess what we're missing in that formula that no one talks about? We're missing people who can teach it. And if you don't have broadband, and Al, one of the things that is fascinating about you and your history is you basically came out of math and science. You're STEM educated, you know.
I was good at math and science. I'm not saying I didn't get a degree in it or something.
But my point is, we need more kids who feel comfortable in math and science to pursue STEM degrees. And if we don't teach them from first grade on, if they don't have an opportunity to be exposed, they're going to miss an opportunity for a job opportunity of the future, whether it's in AI. We aren't going to stop technology. We have to train to technology, train the workforce. We're leaving rural kids behind.
Do you have PSEO in North Dakota, post-secondary education opportunities? There are. I went to a rural school where the kids went. This is kids going to a 2-year community college while they're in high school, and getting credits.
Yeah, we have something like that.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. So we just don't give it the Minnesota name.
Yeah.
Because we got our own ideas over there in North Dakota.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. Oh yeah. The Hoyaw caucus.
Yeah. You well, it was a small caucus, wasn't it?
It's just me and Grassley, I think.
And me.
And you? Oh well, only because you were pretend. You don't really talk like that.
No, but I can. So no. We would, you know, in the Senate, just go, "Oh, hi," you know. So we were the OYA caucus.
Oh, yeah.
I don't know if Grassley knew he was in the OYA caucus.
I think he did. I think he got your humor better than what you think he got your humor.
No, he loves you.
Anyway, we digress.
The digressions are sometimes the best part of the show.
So, you know, one of the things, Al, that you have a friend in New York, guy who loves you. And his name is, he's a big venture capitalist, but he started out his career in math. He was a math professor.
Oh, Jim Simons.
Yeah, Jim Simons.
I don't think he was a professor. I think he was just a friggin' genius.
Yeah, but I think he taught for a while. But talk about how you convinced him to come to Northern Minnesota to teach teachers on how to teach math.
It's just one of the many things I do and did.
But I think more of that. But, you know, because if you can find a teacher that can understand, not everybody's going to learn math the way everybody, the kid next to him learns. And if you can, in fact, keep kids in math through the eighth grade and they get past algebra, if you can keep them in the sciences past the eighth grade, you're going to have a foundation. Right now, I can't tell you the number of kids who say, I want to go to school to be a nurse. Guess what? We have a crisis coming. In terms of retirement, here's a number for you. In the next decade, 1/3 of all licensed physicians in America today will be over the age of 65. And nurses are even worse. And so we've got to fill that pipeline of healthcare workers. And we can do it in rural America if we have people who can teach math and science. And that's why it's so important.
We also have to make being a doctor an experience that's not typing stuff into a computer and restore some of the kinds of
connectivity that people I mean, you know, so when I was elected, my husband's a family physician. I said, well, you know, there's probably opportunities in DC. And he just looked at me and said, number one, I'm old and I don't want to move. But number two, he said, you know, when I have a patient who walks through the door, I can usually tell what's going on because I've treated him for so long. I can tell, you know, by how they walk, because he knows them. And that's what you want in a practicing family physician. You want somebody who,
I remember
who has
you
a
said,
history.
Don't you want to support me in Washington?
And then I went, please. And he went, no, I'm not moving to that hellhole of a town. I'm staying in Mandan, North Dakota, and mowing my grass. That's life.
Yeah.
You know, but I think the point is that physicians have to feel like there's a reward system, and we have to change how we look at medicine. But that's a whole nother topic. And I think if you look at the issues in healthcare that are unique to rural America, just take the issues in urban healthcare and multiply them times two.
Well, they have shortages of doctors.
And we have a higher cost of healthcare. Oh, it's horrible. Mental health delivery in rural America is horrible, Al.
And we have in rural America, a crisis, an opioid crisis.
Right.
And we don't have the people to treat that.
Providers. And I think one of the things that we've been talking about is at One Country, which is how do you kind of take these issues that aren't unique to rural America, the challenges of your kid getting a quality education, or the challenges of health care, the challenges of having a job that will pay you enough to actually put food on the table. How do you explain the nuance and the difference in solutions in rural America? And one of the things that I've been discouraged about is, in spite of Iowa leading the caucuses, so you'd think that everybody would have a robust rural plan, what you're seeing is a lot of discussion about, oh, well, let's break up big tech companies that deal with agriculture. Well, that might be a good idea, but it's not going to put one more dime in the pocket of a North Dakota farmer. It's not
well,
right now.
Anybody who's running for president has to be able to walk. And this is a cliche that they use in the debates all the time. You got to be able to walk and chew gum. And I go, okay, well, then how about you got to be able to come up with another cliche?
Walk and chew gum.
Yeah. I mean, listen, think about rural Minnesota anyway. You meet the coolest people. You meet a Gary Kubley, and Gary in Southwest Minnesota, and he was hilarious. And I remember one day I was going to an organic farm. Mm-hmm. I was staying with him, and he said, "Well, that's one of them farms where every animal has a name." And you know, and you see the benefit of the space program, because they're plowing with GPS and they harvest with GPS. So I harvested 5 acres at Kevin Papp's farm. Kevin is the head of the Farm Bureau, which is the conservative. There's two farmers organizations, the Farmers Union and the Farm Bureau. And the Farm Bureau is very conservative, and they like Republicans. Mm-hmm. I'm sure they endorse.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. If they're conservative in Minnesota, oh, yeah.
Not voting for you. You're too. Now,
The North Dakota Farm Bureau doesn't endorse the Farm Bill.
Oh, they're really out there. So the first time there's a friend of the farmer plaque that the Farm Bureau gives. Uh-huh. I got, like, the second year I was there, I got a friend of the farmer plaque, and there was like a little presentation. And I said, this really means a lot to me, because it did.
Yeah.
And it was because this really kind of very conservative organization. And he went like, oh, it's just the way you voted. and so it was clearly said in a way like, oh, come on, we don't like you.
You just checked the box on the votes.
Yeah, you voted.
Yeah.
We
had to give it to you because we have this scorecard thing, Al, and you marked all those boxes, and then we said, oh, golly. Now we got to give it to the Al Franken.
You were great on ethanol, and you were great on other biofuels. And so he really does this. He doesn't say those words, oh, we don't like you. It's just for voting the right way. But he might as well have. So every time I see him, and I see him a lot when you're going around the state, I just give him shit about it. And then he said, okay, you know, And then he invited me out to harvest the Franken 5.
Uh-huh.
So I harvested.
Those 5 acres.
5 acres.
Do you remember what you were harvesting?
Corn.
Okay.
Yeah. And I said, is the Franken 5 like your worst 5 acre? Because are we going to go in the truck, get it weighed, and is it going to be really pitiful? And he goes, no, you know. And I said, because I don't want it going around the state like, oh my God, that's my Franken 5. I just didn't want Franken 5 to be like,
it's all that dry stuff at the top of the hill, or it's the wet stuff at the bottom.
Or be like, okay, if you're going to put a pole for transmission, go to the Franken Five. And so I had this terrible fear. And then we went to the grain elevator.
Yes.
And it was a little late. He had saved this for me. And it was pretty middle October.
Yeah.
And he was worried about the moisture.
Yeah.
That would be too dry.
And no, probably not too wet, probably.
No, no, it really just was drying out that year. At least it was drying out. And it was perfect. It had the perfect amount of moisture. And so they weighed us going in, and I was going to leave. Uh-huh. I was going to leave and go on to something else. And on the way out, they're weighing his truck, and he's saying goodbye to me. I'm saying, no, I have to get in the truck.
Yeah, because otherwise the weight's off.
Yeah, and he goes like, oh, God, yeah, you remembered that. And then so he was.
But for those who don't understand, when you come in and have the truck weighed, you come in, when if they know what the empty weight is with the bodies in it, you have to you have to have the same people. Yeah.
You subtract the empty weight from the weight when it was full of corn.
But if you add a few new bodies, you know, get the kids in the back, you don't deliver as much corn as what you say you're going to deliver.
Yeah. So I was being fair to the grain elevator, and Kevin wasn't trying to screw.
Yeah, he was just forgot. He just wanted your company.
So then, whenever I'd see him, he'd go like, oh, I've been telling everybody about you getting in the truck.
Well, Al, we're all sitting on pins and needles. How did the Franken Five do in yield?
The yield was just fine.
Just fine. Like, it wasn't like record yield. It was average for the year. What were you?
You know what?
Was the Franken Five average?
It was not remarkable either way.
Oh,
so there was no remarking about it.
Yeah. That's kind of worse. That's the worst ending to the story.
No, this is funnier not, if it was the best ending of the story is that he just. From then on, he was a great friend.
Yeah, yeah. Well, and that's that actually is a very relevant story, because even people who you don't like, or you think you don't like, or you don't trust, I used to tell young people this. I said, if somebody's mad at you, and they say, yeah, I say, go stand next to them, because it's human nature. Either they're going to hit you or do something mean, or eventually you're going to melt. I mean, you know. Yeah. But what I'm saying is that in politics, that's definitely true. Yeah, the groups that you want to spend time with in your home state are the groups who disagree with you most. Now, there's some groups
that
you're
the
never
going to. That you can win over.
Well, not always.
You can win some over.
Yeah.
And that's, we're talking about votes. We're talking about how Democrats get votes from rural country. You win people over. And this is when you're electing senators, every vote counts. I know that. 312 was my margin in 2008-09.
By that, I won by a landslide, right? I won by 3,000 votes.
And a much smaller population.
A much tougher state. One of the things that happened in 16 is I saw this trend, and I've been around the block since my first race I ran in 1984. So I run in a rural state, used to win elections by 65%, right? In North Dakota.
When I got there, we had the two senators were Dorgan.
And Conrad.
Yeah. So you had two Democratic,
and Pomeroy over in the,
and
at
the
one
house.
Point when Governor Sinner was governor, the entire congressional delegation and the governor were Democrats. So this isn't so far removed. So the question is kind of what happened, and you could see this trend. You could see this incredible trend of people moving away from the Democratic Party. So I invited John Podesta, who you remember, Hillary's campaign chairman, to come over, and Obama's
chief of staff.
Yeah, to come over and actually sit down with rural state Democrats to talk about this trend and say she's got to be more responsive in rural America. She's got to show up in rural America. She's got to understand that.
Like rural Wisconsin and rural Michigan
and
rural Pennsylvania.
We won't. I mean, there's enough punch in there. But my point is, You know, then what happened is they got distracted by a primary that they didn't expect they're going to have, which was more robust than what they thought, which was the Bernie primary. And because of worrying about bringing the Bernie faction back into the fold, I think they ignored those moderate people out there who wanted someone different. The one thing I will tell people, and I say this all the time, they don't like Donald Trump. I mean, there's a percentage of people in rural America who actually like him.
Yeah,
Most people do not like him. They don't like his behavior.
That's really good to know.
Well, it's true. I don't think they like the behavior. They don't like the fact that he lies. They don't like the fact that he brags. I mean, what did he say the other day that he was somewhere where he wasn't? Oh, that he went down to be with the 9/11 first responders, which wasn't true. I mean, none of this stuff is true. He says stuff all the time that's not true.
Yeah, I mean, it comes at you so much that you can't remember it.
But people in rural America, if Donald Trump wasn't a billionaire, right, or whatever, let's give him the benefit of the doubt. If he wasn't this guy who seemingly has so much business power, and he walked in and sat down at the local cafe and talks the way he talks to the public in the local cafe, people would pick up their plates and move to a different table. They wouldn't sit and listen to it.
Yeah, they'd say, what an asshole.
Yeah, and they'd say, you know, who is that guy? Why does he think he's so remarkable? Why is he?
And what's the deal with his hair?
Yeah, they'd say, oh.
Yeah, did you see that? I mean,
who's
he kidding?
He's got kind of a funny color, too, doesn't he?
Yeah, well, yeah, we don't do that here, you know.
Doesn't he wear his ties a little long, too? What's that?
Yeah, and also wearing a tie into the cafe here. And the suit is kind of ridiculous, don't you think?
Oh, if you want to win votes, you probably shouldn't show up like you're ready to preach the sermon. You should show up like you're ready to, you know, go out on the tractor.
Let's talk about some of the positive stuff about rural America. A writer for the Washington Post, he looked at data for the Washington Post, and just as a fun, I thought it was fun, column, he wrote, what's the worst place in the United States, the worst place to live? And he found this town that's close to North Dakota, but it's in Minnesota. He worked for the Washington Post, but he lived almost in Baltimore because that's all he could afford. Mm-hmm. And he had these two kids, and his wife worked for the federal government. They invited him to come. They weren't mad at him. They just said, you should come and see what this place is like. He ended up moving to that town.
Isn't that great?
Their life in where they were, yeah. His commute was impossible. Yeah. He can get all the data he likes at a computer. Yeah. And they moved there. Yeah. and this is part of what you get, yeah, in a rural community.
Have you had a chance to catch up with Sister Simone, the Nuns on the Bus?
I have not
seen
her of
late. Oh, she's wonderful. She's wonderful. You know what she's doing?
I know. What?
You know, Sister Simone is from like some, you know, grew up, I think, fairly wealthy, although she wouldn't admit that, in California, right? So her whole experience has been really coastal and urban. And so she saw all these trends and said, I'm going to go out and visit with people in rural America. And so she's been going all over, and she tells a unique experience she had in Poetry, Texas. Isn't that a great name? One woman comes in late and she says, oh, you know, I was helping so-and-so because their cows are out, and that's what we're all about in rural America. And she goes through all of these, you know, everybody talks about how they survive because not because they have a lot of money, but because they have these neighbor relationships that really are a village taking care of the village. And that they're very, very,
yeah,
they look after each other and they care about each other. Then she raises the question of, well, then they must be supportive of food assistance through the SNAP program. And she said the tenor of the entire conversation changed when you introduced a broader kind of global or national kind of policy of helping each other.
A federal program.
But you know, they saw that as big government, not consistent with their values. And I think when you talk about it, there's an ability that we all have to help each other, but it's limited. And I think we have to have that conversation about what does this look like for student loans. A lot of people in rural America are on Medicaid, right? Or elderly on Medicare. Those are two hugely successful, very important healthcare programs for which there would not be rural healthcare.
Yeah, the states, what were the states in 18 who had referendums on expanding Medicaid passed? I know Idaho is one of them.
Utah,
Kansas. Those are pretty rural and pretty conservative states.
Right. But you know, the other thing I would say is, so California expanded, New York expanded, Minnesota expanded. Why are you letting them get the benefit of Medicaid expansion in your little state? A lot of the rural states, a lot of the southern rural states are the ones that haven't expanded.
Those are the only ones.
Right.
Now.
But think about that. Think about where is the worst quality health care in America? And they can argue with me about this. Certainly in rural America, it's in the South.
Do you ever feel like you're settling? For your foundation, that is. Maybelline's new Instant Age Rewind Eraser Foundation doesn't settle into fine lines and wrinkles. With SPF 20 and moisturizing Pro Vitamin B5, this foundation not only provides medium coverage and a natural finish, but also protects and nourishes your skin. And the best part? The blurring sponge tip applicator makes application a breeze. Say goodbye to cakey, uneven foundation, and hello to a flawless, radiant complexion. Try our new foundation today and see the difference for yourself at amazon.com/instant-eraser-foundation.
Sheldon Whitehouse, our friend, used to have this chart, and he'd say, if we're going to reward high quality, low cost, who gets rewarded? Guess who gets rewarded? North Dakota, Minnesota. If we're going to penalize low quality, high cost, who's going to be penalized? It's the southern states. It's the red states. And it's just kind of an anomaly. And people look at that and say, well, why do they hate Medicaid when, you know, they would get benefit? They already, you know, a high percentage of them are on some kind of government assistance. Why? It just seems weird to people.
Part of it is the information they get.
Well, that's true. I mean, part of it is this mystique of we're not interconnected. We are resilient and reliant on each other and no one else.
Let's get into religion.
Yeah, because I think that plays a role in all of this.
Well, I think that plays a role certainly in, I think one of the most brilliant things that Trump did was announced that the Federalist Society, the Heritage Foundation, were going to pick the judges. And the people who are pro-life, anti-abortion, anti-choice, they said, oh, good. He's going to appoint people that are believe the same way we do, and they care tremendously about that.
You know, when people say, well, people like what he's done with the conservative court, I always stop and say many of the people would not be people who would support the kind of pro-business court positions that have been taken. When you say a conservative court, it's all about this issue of abortion. It is in North Dakota. If you said, do you think corporations should be able to, you know, have every right that a human being has? They would say no. But do they want a conservative court? Yes, they want a conservative court because
mandatory arbitration is one of my issues in the Senate.
People hate that.
Yeah.
Being told that they don't have a right, you know, having a usury contract that says you have to sign on the dotted line or you don't get our services, right?
Well, that's a if you're a customer, but an employment, you know, or a customer. Let's say, For example, when Wells Fargo opened all those accounts for people, those fake accounts,
their only redress was arbitration.
It was arbitration.
They didn't sign a contract,
and that's because arbitration is secret. So this went on for years without people hearing about it. And so because of mandatory arbitration in financial contracts.
Services.
And financial services contracts, this kind of crap was allowed to continue.
Yeah. No, I don't know how you can justify denying someone the access to courts in America.
But this issue is, I'm talking about abortion, is just an enormous issue with people.
Yeah, and here's one where it really is important that we start having a conversation, because people will automatically say, well, here was a great example. I read an article recently written by a woman who said what she does when she's arguing this point. She said, okay, you think life begins at the point of conception. You could have some fertilized embryos in a building that's on fire, or you could have a child. You can carry out 1,000 fertilized embryos, or you can carry out the child, but you can't carry out both. Well, who are you going to rescue?
That's pretty.
Yeah. I mean, it's an interesting visual, right? And even she said, I've got to quit doing that because it's too confrontational. It's, you know, on their core beliefs. But it does illustrate, you know, do they really believe that that's 1,000 lives compared to the one life that's standing there breathing?
Also, there are so many anti-choice people who also don't want birth control.
Oh, I know. So think about this. The state of Colorado, remember this example? Colorado actually got contacted, and eventually it was revealed it was one of the Buffett foundations that did it, contacted Planned Parenthood of Colorado. And they said, look, we want to help you with teenage pregnancy rates. We're willing to give you any amount of money you want to basically do IUDs, which is a much longer term. Because one of the challenges with other forms of birth control is the reliance on the person to actually do something on a routine. And so if you can do some temporary, more permanent, and I know that's an oxymoron, but if you can do a different, the IUDs have been a godsend.
Right.
In terms of teenage. So they did this in a Denver suburb where they basically provide this service, dramatically reduce the rate of teenage pregnancy, but also importantly, dramatically reduce the rate of abortion. Now, are people willing to fund that kind of contraception to eliminate abortions in this country?
That's a very good question. I don't know.
I the answer is no.
And also, and this is where religion comes in, I think sex education is has been shown, obviously, and teaching contraception prevents pregnancies, therefore prevents abortions.
And it's interesting because when my kids went through it, we got the obligatory slip. If you don't want your child to participate, you can opt out. And so when next parent-teachers conference I went to, I asked the health teacher, I said, I'm just curious, how many parents actually returned a slip opting their kids out? She said, none.
Mm-hmm.
So you've got the tyranny of the people who don't want their kids to have that education dictating what the vast majority of people want for their kids.
Of course. That happens with a lot of things.
But school administrators and state administrators need to not let the tail wag the dog on this. And we all know that health
but
education
but let's
is
get
critical.
Back to the topic, because there are these social issues, and that one I think is based on religion, a religious philosophy. Maybe I'm wrong.
I think the one issue that I will tell you has huge consequences in rural America, and that's immigration.
Well, they want immigration because they want those are people that work in agriculture.
Well,
right?
I'll tell you what they want. They want a secure border. And so start there. So what they want is
to dairy farmers. I've talked to so many different.
But you know what? That dairy farmer who knows that immigration is critical to his future or her future, go 10 miles south and ask what. I mean, I got in this argument with a rural panel about, you know, how welcoming. They use the Wilmer example, and I talked about you and the Valley Victorian and how moving that is at that community. I said, if you think that's a reflection of where they are in rural America, it's not true. But guess, I mean, here's another, let's talk about the good stuff. I also met a woman who has done a Chinese Mandarin immersion program in Casper, Wyoming. And there is a waiting list of kids to get into that program. I mean, there's tons of really good
things. They all want to get rich with China, because they see where the wind's blowing. They know.
Oh, Al, don't be so. I mean, maybe they just want
to learn Chinese.
Yeah, a different kind of challenge.
Okay, let's just sum up here. Democrats, and by that you mean Democratic candidates, right? One, have to show up.
Yep.
Two, listen.
And not come with your list of arguments on why you're right, but actually listen and actually understand that people who hold a different opinion are still good people and they're not racist. I mean, you know, that's what the president is driving in this division that he's doing right now. He's trying to convince people that not only don't they appreciate your contribution and who you are and how hard you work, but they think you're a racist because you think I'm a racist. And right? I mean, by extension, that's what he's saying.
And, you know, and why would we think that?
Well, on him, it's pretty obvious why we think it. But I don't think that's true of rural America.
So he is saying racist stuff in order to gin up his base that isn't racist, but
they see grievance in it.
Oh, man.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, that's calling us names again. Yeah, that we're this person or that person, and that's not who we are.
That's a pretty sophisticated.
I don't know. I think I think it's legitimate, and so I mean, I think that the biggest mistake that Hillary made.
So what you're saying, and because I just want to get this right, you're saying it's legitimate that Republicans or people in rural areas think that Democrats consider them racist because they're white and in a rural area?
Yeah. Yeah. I think that what they hear is starting with Hillary Clinton calling them deplorable, which she didn't. She said half of them were deplorable. Yeah. But what they hear is that we're not respected, and at least he shows up, says what he thinks, and respects us. And so my point is, you know, what we need to do is not fall into the trap of categorizing and stereotyping rural people. I'm not saying that's
a good start.
Right. Right. So don't make assumptions.
Don't.
I'm not saying you aren't going to run into racist people in rural America. I'm not saying you aren't going to run into people who are unmovable in rural America. But I am telling you that I think the majority of people in rural America are hardworking, open-minded, truly Christian or religious people who want better things for this country, better things for each other. And I think that they are deeply disturbed by the divisions that are being created in America. And I think they're deeply disturbed by the by an administration and by a leader who lies and who brags and who doesn't seem to be competent.
Yeah. And appoint and corrupt.
Right, and corrupt. I mean, I mean, there's.
Let's say that.
These are people who, I mean, you know, people I grew up with can look at a situation and size it up pretty quickly. And when they see the president tweeting about Kim Jong-un that he is his best friend, they don't like that. They don't like what's happening with Russia. They don't like what's happening with China, that the president has dumped all the trade agreements onto the ground and mashed them up, and there's no order to it. And he's promised it would be quick, and it's not quick. And that's going to affect their livelihood. I mean, and I'm not saying you're going to win all of them, but I am telling you, and that's the theory behind One Country, and it's onecountryproject.org. You can go out and take a look at the data. But you can't win the presidency, and you certainly can't win the Senate unless you start learning how to talk to rural America.
And if there's anyone out there listening to this who may run in the future or is running, it actually, the people in rural America, in rural Minnesota, are unbelievably great.
Well, and funny. So yeah. I've got a joke, Al.
Okay.
I got a joke about the farmer. This is a true story, unfortunately. This guy was a very popular teacher in rural South Dakota.
Okay.
And unfortunately was diagnosed with pancreatic cancer, and everybody who loved him knew that, you know, his time was not, the outcome was not going to be good. And so they asked him, they said, so what are you going to do with the time you have left? He said, oh, I know exactly what I'm going to do. He said, I'm going to get married. I'm going to buy me a Dodge pickup, and I'm going to move to North Dakota. And they looked at him and said, huh? And he goes, yeah, I figured that'll be the longest damn year of my life. That's rural humor. I mean, you know, here's the guy who just, I mean, I love that story because it just shows how in the face of adversity, there's people who just have so much resilience with humor and with neighbors and with friends. And that, I think it's also important for rural America to know that they don't have a license on goodness. You know, they aren't the only place where people find community.
Well, we've been talking with Heidi Heitkamp, who has formed an organization called One Country. Mm-hmm. And I think the meaning of it is that we're one country. One country, under God.
Indivisible.
No,
with liberty
no,
and justice
no,
for
very
all.
Divisible, unfortunately. Okay, we're done.
Okay, we're out.
Well, thanks for listening, everybody. And that music that you're listening to is from Leo Kottke, my pal Leo Kottke from Minneapolis, and one of the great guitarists and one of the great guys in this country. But I love this piece, and I love pretty much everything Leo does. I'd like to thank everyone who works on the show. That would be me and Peter Ogburn. Peter is the producer. He also engineers the show. I do the research and booking. So I'd like to thank Peter and myself. Okay, please listen in next time. Goodbye.
Hey, Prime members, you can listen to the Al Franken podcast ad-free on Amazon Music. Download the Amazon Music app today. Or you can listen ad-free with Wondery Plus in Apple Podcasts. Before you go, tell us about yourself by completing a short survey at wondery.com/survey.
When you're committed to raising the standard, you're bound to ruffle some feathers. At Happy Egg, we like to say we farm differently. But in reality, we produce eggs the way people used to, by partnering with local small family farmers who raise our happy hens on 8 or more acres. Because in our opinion, farming shouldn't be complicated. It should be happy. Choose happy with Happy Egg. Visit happyegg.com and look for the yellow carton at a store near you.
Happy
Egg.
Look around. You can find cars like these on AutoTrader. New cars, used cars, electric cars, maybe even flying cars. Okay, no flying cars, but as soon as they get invented, they'll be on AutoTrader. Just you wait. AutoTrader.